Or if you look down in Cuba and you say, what happened down in Cuba? How did Castro tip an entire society? He had his own ideas of what he thought needed to happen. There certainly was a wound, and the wound was enormous imbalance between rich and poor, very much like in Venezuela, where I went down and did the negotiations for peace down there for the Chavistas and anti-Chavistas. Massive, massive differentiation between rich and poor, which creates quite a wound. So that's the context. That's the environmental factor that makes something be able to spread in that context. What else? You had a person who was extraordinary as a communicator. Castro was an unbelievable speaker, an unbelievably passionate man. He was a man who could spread emotion like a contagion. And the other factor is the message. The piece that's missing is like the virus itself, the message has to be sticky. It has to be something that has an impact. And he came up with a message that in the beginning, not many people listened to. If you know the story of what Castro did, in what was it, 55, I guess, he came up with this idea that he was going to overthrow the government, and he tried to rally a bunch of people to do it, and he had a very, very small number of people, literally 100 people trying to turn over the government. But he had a good plan. His plan was that he was going to attack the day after this big holiday when all these people in this armory, all the soldiers, would probably be drunk and tired. And he knew he was going to attack it. He was going to take over all the weapons, then take all the weapons and give those weapons to the farmers who were basically suffering while these large capitalists were basically reaping all the rewards. And he was very smart. He had the advantage of surprise on his side. And when he made this attack happen, they were not quite effective. Somebody actually managed to signal and reflect to the rest of the armory that they were there, and they were fought off and they were shot up. And a few of these people, and at this time, Castro was an unknown in his country, in a very small number of people, his idea was not really a virus of any sort. His failure became his success. Because what happened was the military police and the army and the nationalists that were in control at that time became so upset and angry that when they went out and they shot up these people, many of the people as they flew, as they got away, were shot. So they went into the towns to see anybody that was wounded or broken down, and they mistakenly took people who were not part of the process, who had been injured in the fields and so forth, and assumed that there were some of the rebels, and they basically interrogated them and murdered them. And this took a mass number of people and made them turn against the government who'd never been turned against the government before, because they saw the injustice and unfairness of the government at a level that was much greater than economic. It was pure brutality of families, and it was done in mass. They had such an overreaction to Castro's attack. Castro escaped. And as a result of this, the area they escaped to, finally the Catholic Church got involved as a result of this. This message going out, because somebody had to stop all the killing that was going on. The government was killing people in mass looking for who had done this. And so they finally got one of the heads of the Catholic Church to go out to where these men were hiding. And he promised them their safety. And as a result, they came in. And so now the Catholic Church was behind Castro. And Castro was put in front of the trial. He was an amazing orator. Here was a man who was infectious in his communication and his emotion. And that entire speech was copied and duplicated and spread throughout the country. And he was committed to 15 years in prison, figuring everybody would forget about it. But there was so much upset and so much communication. The message was spread like crazy at this point, because people are upset who were never upset before. People that had never been affected by just the economic impulses were affected by losing family members by the main government. And within 2 years, they pressured them to release all these prisoners, and Castro disappeared, went down into Mexico, and created what he called the J-27, the July 27th group. That's when they launched their original attack. And sure enough, he, from the outside, put this small group of people together, and they kept putting out this message and direction. Within a few years, they took advantage of economic problems and challenges, and he was the head of a country. And by the way, when he first came in, he broadcast everything as that they were not communists and that it was based upon the same principles as Jefferson. He communicated to New York that they were not a communist country and that they were open to, you know, feedback and financial infrastructure, but the U.S. read it differently, and sure enough, he was turned to communism. So any place in the world that you look, usually big changes started with small things happening in a certain sequence and a certain timing that made the process happen. And the three factors that I just told you about are the fundamental factors. Now, There's a book that triggered me to do all to talk to you about all this, and I'm going to pull a good portion of it from this. And it's written by a man named Malcolm Gladwell, and I wanted him to come speak here. I actually spoke to him a couple days ago again, and we're going to probably bring him next year because I'm so impressed by his work. He's done such a great job of researching a variety of subjects. He's now focused on the first 3 seconds of communication. He's a science writer. And he wrote a book called Tipping Point, very similar to the pieces that I'm describing to you, and it was written several years ago. Somehow I missed the book. I've had so many friends read the book, and I've talked to them about the book, and they said, yeah, I read that book. It was a really great book. And I read the book 3 times in a week, you know, and I guess that's probably what's different about me is, you know, nothing I read was new to me in terms of as a concept. What was fascinating to me, and the reason I want to bring it to your attention tonight and kind of drive it home with you, was because what was unique was discovering the studies he showed that were counterintuitive to what we would think of as common sense. In other words, I'm always fascinated by those things that are different than what we expect, and I want to figure out how to use them. So when I go through a book, I don't just read the book and go, oh, yeah, I know Tipping Point. I teach this. I got a million other metaphors for this. These are nice additional examples. I talked to several friends, and they went, yeah, but I said, but what about this study? And I remember the statistics and the numbers, and I said, because if you use this in your business, it would mean that. So I'd like you right now to operate fresh today, because I know you've heard me talk about the subject from different angles than I will tonight. But think of it as a brand new concept. Think of this as a way to revolutionize your thinking, because here's what all of us are trained by life experience to believe, that change is slow and gradual, even though it's not true. Change happens in an instant, it happens in a moment, and it happens explosively. But because most of us experience change, like people often say to me, you know, well, it took 10 years to change that. You know me, I've always said it took you a minute. It took you 10 years to get to the minute where you made the change, right? 10 years till you finally got sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, 10 years till you got to that point, finally said, I've had it, boom. That wasn't a 10-year change, that was a moment. There was a moment when change happens. But the second thing that happens is we all have the illusion that we get out of things what we put into them. There are certain elements, like brand, for example, that are not proportional. That when you have a brand, you don't get an equivalent response out of a brand as you would say, you know, some other benefit in your business. Some things are more valuable than others. I was talking to Jim the other day, and he was telling me about this plan he has. He's very, very smart plan about seeing a trend that he's noticed, and then a certain way he wants to capitalize on that trend. He's not just building businesses. He's building his business to sell it. So he's figuring out who's already buying a certain kind of business, and where do I want to go, and what's that really worth, and what are they really paying? And it's a brilliant strategy Jim's done. And what he's doing is he's using his time more strategically. He's realizing things are not all equivalent, that there are a few things that can give me a giant reward.